Thank you. Thank you very much for this paper. I think we all better understand how the future can be recollected. I like that quotation by John Darby. There's not enough history. Yes, history as opposed to all kinds of memories. If you write history, try to recreate a narrative that corresponds to the historical reality. Yes, yes. I'll perhaps begin with the first question. Do you think that the judicial system can help to contribute to the creation or a recreation of what actually happened and perhaps reduce those memories which are sometimes manipulated for various ends? Do people listen to what tribunals, courts say? Does that have an impact on collective memories, do you think?
They listen as long as they say what they want them to say, to be quite honest with you, Christophe. I mean, there are several things. In currency in Northern Ireland at the minute is a museum of the Troubles. And the British government are also talking about creating an official record of the Troubles. But I don't even know how you begin to do that. I mean, what's the official record going to be of the 27th of June 1970? You know, it's, you know, you're right, there was a conflict in this area of Belfast and five people died, full stop. And once you go beyond that, people saying, I don't agree with that. You know, who said that? Yeah. And, you know, the other place this is manifesting is in the definition of victims and victimhood. Yeah. And who they're quite complicated, but there are a couple of categories being made in Northern Ireland at the moment. One is the idea that everybody was a victim. So the Eames-Bradley Tribunal said that everybody in Northern Ireland should be treated as a victim. They actually said everybody in Northern Ireland, for any part of that time, should be given £12,000. Draw a line under it. That did not go down well, yeah. And there, you know, the Republicans are now trying to put forward a rewriting of history, a writing of history that projects them as much victims as anyone else. The Loyalists are putting forward a reading of history which says, "But we, you know, we are the innocent people here." You know, the Loyalists are putting forward a view of history that says we had the legitimacy on our side. And Republicans are putting forward a view of history that says, but we are what we did was as legitimate as what the British Army did. And it just get, you know, it's just, I have no idea how to untangle all that, Chris. Yeah. You know, Christophe, yeah. If it did, I'd do something about it, to be quite honest. But yeah, it's just such a minefield of, I don't think there will ever be an official history. I mean, there are two main types of museums in Northern Ireland. One I've called the Agnostic Museum, and that's the official museums. Like the Ulster Museum. If you go to the Ulster Museum, and their version of the history is, it's all very, you know, straight lines, and this happened this day, this happened that day. You know, the classic museum approach. There is also a huge growth in what I call biased museums, in not official museums, in Belfast at the moment, in which give the Republican side of the story or the Loyalist side of the story, and you know, they're the distance between them is vast. Yeah. So, what the judicial? I don't know. That was about the judiciary, wasn't it? I don't know. I cannot see any way they'll ever get an official definition of it.
Thank you very much, Professor McCauley, for your presentation. I'm much more familiar with the Republic, as I have. I've learned a lot about unionism and also about ways to think about memory and forgetting. In the Republic, I had the sense that their engagement with history during the decade of centenaries, that academic historians and memory entrepreneurs talked to one another a lot more, and that as a result of that, the narrative has been complicated, and layers of history have been brought to light in a new way. In Northern Ireland, to what extent do academic historians like yourself and memory entrepreneurs talk to organise those commemorations?
Well, you're quite right about the Republic. In fact, the president ran a series of workshops online. I don't know if you picked up on any of those. And he was particularly important. He brought in areas of memory that had been hidden, such as women's memory, a couple of sessions in women's memory. The problem with the Republic is they have got an almost unifying narrative to tell. So since 1921, we are a unified. We've been working towards a unitary state. They weren't shooting each other. They weren't killing each other. They weren't bombing each other. So academics do try in Northern Ireland to do this, but they quite often hit, as far as I know, and I've certainly hit it myself, they quite often hit the barriers between the two communities. So, you know, I've worked in both communities over the years. It's very difficult to find a forum where you could bring that together. And the British government don't seem particularly interested in doing it. And the Northern Ireland government, when it exists, which isn't very often it seems, they're not particularly interested in doing it as well. I mean, there's certainly the only unification around this subject that I know, I can think of, is the one where they've said they don't like the British government's New Deal and the implication of drawing a line under it. So people still do want to talk about the past. But very often in Northern Ireland, that when they say we want to talk about the past, we want to talk about memory, they mean we want to allocate blame. And I think that's the real difficulty in Northern Ireland, that they haven't got beyond that blame part of the culture. So a museum of the Troubles may well appear someday. But I mean, I'm not sure it would be my first port of call to find out what happened, because it's just so... It'll just be so banal. And I know there's some good people working on that idea. But it seems to be going incredibly slowly from what I know.
Thank you.
Thank you. Very interesting question, yeah.
Yeah, fiction is a word you didn't use, but I understand collective memory can be considered as such. Is it a word you deliberately try to avoid, or
collective memory can be considered
fiction? The word fiction. Do you prefer talking about storytelling, for example?
That's another very interesting question. I haven't really gone down that line, as you probably noticed. I haven't really got a good justification for not going down that line. But it's just, I mean, it's just a different.
I mean, what makes history different from fiction?
Yeah. Nothing. Nothing makes history different.
But
no, I think the notion is status. That's what makes them different. I mean, when I come here and I try to read a French newspaper, I quite often see a sociologist site quoted. Yeah. I haven't seen a sociologist quoted in a UK newspaper for 30 years. They just you know, they quote lots of historians. So there's a certain, I don't know if this is universal, but there's a certain status given to historians and history in Northern Ireland or in the UK that isn't allocated to other sections of academia. I don't know if that's what you're hinting at, but that's certainly the case. So, even if you get something very, very, because I listen to radio, the local news in Northern Ireland a lot, even if you get something very contemporary, they most often go to a historian to answer the questions, which, they're probably not the best people to go to. As regards fiction, it's just not something I've gone down that road at all, but it would be interesting to trace the history of the Troubles through fiction. I'm sure someone is quite capable of doing that, it's just I'm not, to be quite honest with you. But there's no reason why collective memory has to be confined to these areas. I mean, quite a lot of the stuff I didn't look at today, mainly because of time, is writings by the own community. Now, it depends what sort of fiction you mean. Do you mean novels, or is that what you're thinking of? Or?
No, I mean just fiction in general. When I heard you talking about storytelling, I wondered whether the word fiction could be appropriate in this case.
It could be in some cases, yeah. My use of the word storytelling tends to come from social anthropology, because that's what I did my first degree in. So when I think of storytelling, that's the way I tend to think of it. But yeah, there are other ways to tell stories, obviously. Yeah.
One fact and a lot of imagination.
Yeah. Maybe I just lack imagination. That could be interesting. Two.
Can I ask you about forgetting? You said that forgetting was as important as remembering.
Yeah.
Can you help us think about forgetting and how to forget properly? Is there a framework in which to do this?
Well, by forgetting, I mean a deliberate amnesia. So, for example, let me think. After the First World War, when troops came back to Ireland, they were deliberately written out of history in the Republic. So there were more poppies sold in Dublin for 2 years than there were in Belfast. But what happened with the Irish Civil War was that they were written out of history, and they had no place in the state because they'd been fighting for Britain. Now, it's only very, very recently that's begun to be reappropriated in the story. So there are vast bits of every society, every story, that are just either ignored or deliberately written out of it. So we were talking at lunchtime about the Irish language in Gaelic, which is largely seen as associated with one side of the community now. But it was also pointed out that there's now a huge Irish-speaking school in East Belfast. And I pointed out that one of the Orange Order lodges used to have its banner in Irish and used to open its meetings in Irish. And Irish was central to, the Irish language was driven on the turn of century before last by Protestants. So there's no reason why the current way of thinking of it should be seen as what happened, because it actually wasn't what happened, but it's been reproduced in that collective memory has been reproduced in that way, that Irish language is something to do with republicanism and nationalism and nothing to do with Protestantism and unionism. So that's what I mean by forgetting. And sometimes it can be quite deliberate. Sometimes.
But should we forget? Are there instances where we should forget if it promotes peace? Or is it justified? Are we justified in forgetting? Or should we always run out every memory?
Well, are you asking me?
Yeah.
I cannot see the place for forgetting.
No. Okay. I wanted to ask.
Yeah. I don't think forgetting brings about peace and conflict situations. Mm-hmm. I think what brings about peace and conflict situations, you know, is there going to be more peace in the Middle East if the entire Palestinian population forgets about being driven off the land and the Nakba and the dispersal, or is there going to be more peace if, you know, they say this is part of our history? Doesn't have to be confrontational, but it's an important part to us. It has to be recognized as that by other people. And I think that's the way. It's a bit like this tearing down Black Lives Matter and tearing down statues of, you know, people who ran the slave trade, or you know, I think that's a nonsense. You know, I really do think that's a nonsense. I think that what they need to do is to contextualize all of those things, cover them in plaques, you know, put things up saying this is what happened, this is why it was happening, this is why this is important. So, and I think that's the way to go about it. But other people have other opinions. So. I'll probably get my kneecap on the way home. So.
It's a safe place, don't worry.
So, why interested in Irish studies then? Don't all look down, look up. You're doing a master's, isn't it, are you? Who's doing a master's in Irish studies? You? No? Anybody? Anybody doing a master's in Irish studies? No.
I was, sorry, you were mentioning towards the end of your paper the whole debate today about Brexit and the Northern Ireland Protocol. And I was looking at the seven tests defined by the DUP leader, tests that would allow his party to accept the solution, the agreement that could be found, and thus to participate in the Northern Irish Assembly and Executive, and to get all those institutions back on the road. The tests seem impossible.
Well, at least two of them are impossible,
taken all together, there's no way those tests can be met. But there will have to be a solution.
Yeah.
So, have they painted themselves into a corner?
It's exactly what they've done.
Will, because I suppose when, you know, the United States government, the British government, and the Irish government, you know, try to work out a solution with the European Union also, obviously, they'll probably find a workable arrangement, I would think. But it will not meet those tests. So how do those people who are mobilizing the memories of 1912 and so on, how do they move on after that? Do they continue to oppose it?
They can, and they'll see it as a defeat if it happens. I mean, the DUP have more than painted themselves into the corner. I mean, Brexit, I mean, despite what you hear, Northern Irish people aren't stupid. And they realise, they voted for the DUP in Brexit largely as a, you know, they were told things were going to happen, the same as the UK were told things were going to happen, and they haven't happened, and they know that. So they have been hemorrhaging support, which showed in the last election. They're now, they'll be the second biggest party in the Assembly if it ever happens again. I have my doubts. So they are hemorrhaging support from the wider DUP. I mean, I this might sound a bit strange. I wouldn't go too far to suggest that the whole of the DUP support are raving bigots, because it's quite a wide range of support. A lot of the DUP support them mainly because of the constitutional question. And within that, and I think we're talking about it earlier on, we find quite a lot of different views within it. So they've been kind of hemorrhaging the support from the kind of more liberal DUP, if that isn't a contradiction. So I don't know how they're going to get out of it. People like Mervyn Gibson, certainly, no matter what, I mean, it's, and Jamie Bryson's another name that's becoming prominent. They unless they get all seven regulations through, which they're not, because as you say, I mean, at least two of them I see as impossible. Maybe there are more, Christoph, I don't know. So I don't know, I genuinely don't know how they're going to get out of this one. I mean, they'll probably come up with some sort of classic European British fudge to get that end of it, but how they're going to sell that to their own supporters, I don't know. There's very little. I mean, politics in Northern Ireland is divided as I've ever seen it, and I mean that at the height of the Troubles as well. Yeah, I mean it really is. The only ray of hope is this kind of centre ground of young people who aren't identifying as either unionist or nationalist, and they tend to vote Alliance Party. But even, you know, I'm in the middle of a research project with the Alliance Party then at the moment, and the Alliance Party refused to give a lead on the constitutional question, or refused to ask their members to take a position on the constitutional question. So, you know, one day if this border poll happens and the question is, you know, do you want to be in United Ireland or do you want to be in the United Kingdom, there isn't going to be a box to cross that says neither. Yeah. So, you know, there's some hope there, but not. I mean, bits of the culture of Northern Ireland are changing. Belfast, for example, is a, you know, entirely cosmopolitan city nowadays, you know, apart from certain areas. But I guess there are certain areas of Cork you wouldn't go into after 10 o'clock at night. Yeah. So there is a culture, and there is a generational change as well. And there are also a lot more people in Northern Ireland now who were born outside of Northern Ireland living there as well. So there is the amount of change. But as regards the opposition between unionism, nationalism, and loyalism and republicanism, there's no sense of a coming together. Yeah. I mean, even the Republic didn't send representatives to the centenary events for Northern Ireland. So there are still those tensions that exist and manifest themselves in different ways. So, I mean, it gets really silly, yeah. Sinn Féin refused to let unionists plant a commemorative tree in the grounds of Stormont because they were in charge of the department at the time that said yes or no to such things. You know, and when you hear that happen, you just think, God, what hope is there? You know? Yeah. I mean, loyalists are quite able to do silly things as well, but that's just the one that comes to mind. Yeah, yeah. Some things happen, and you just think there's no other way to read this other than antagonistic. You know, to the other community. That's what it's about. You know. And this whole thing about victimhood is becoming a real issue as well. The British government are pushing through. There'll be no retrospective trials or, you know, just draw a line under it and we'll move on. But people in Northern Ireland, like I say, don't necessarily want to move on for different reasons. So it is a complex situation.
That bill is taking a lot of time to pass through Parliament, isn't it?
It's gone through Parliament. It's being opposed in the Lords. That's why it's taking time.
Because public opinion in Northern Ireland is against this on both sides, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
The European Court of Human Rights, I believe, has expressed serious reservations about the bill as well. Do you think the government will nonetheless try to push it through?
Oh yeah, they are actively trying to push it through. But bits of it have been tweaked, bits of it have been refused, bits of it have been sent back. I don't know if you know, but the House of Lords, it's the upper chamber in British Parliament. But they can. There is a legislation where they can override the House of Lords, mm-hmm. and they're talking about using that now. And it's not good, because as you say, all the political groupings in Northern Ireland, whether they be Unionist, Nationalist, Republican, or Loyalist, are opposed to it. Mm-hmm. The general population are opposed to it. The European Court is opposed to it. I'm not sure where America stands on it, but. It's not going to be popular. Yeah.
And that would probably leave more space for those who wish to propose their own version mm. of history, mm. obviously, mm. yes.
Undoubtedly so, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. This is your last chance if you want to ask a question. Yes.
I want to thank you for your presentation, firstly. And then I wanted to ask, how much of a role does the aspect of forgetting play in not being able to create a collective memory around both sides?
Sorry, could you speak up a little, please? Yeah.
How much of a role does forgetting play in the element that both sides cannot be seen as victims and that they can't see themselves as victims?
Yeah. How much do both sides see themselves as victims, and what role does social forgetting play in that? Is that what you have? Sorry, yeah, I just can't hear you, sorry. That's undoubtedly a factor in it. Both sides do see themselves as victims. They both have... almost diametrically opposed versions from the first day of the Troubles to the last. Broadly, the Unionist side was that the civil rights movement may have had a point. Some were prepared to concede that, but they'd got all the concessions that they asked for by 1970. There was no need for military intervention by the Provisional IRA. There was no need for 25, 30 years of killing people. The Republican version of events is, we were an oppressed people. We had no alternative but to do this. The British Army came in, treated our communities abysmally. Are they surprised at what happened? Those who joined the IRA had a legitimacy from the defence of the community, and therefore should be treated as legitimate forces within this argument. Now, if you take that range, there's a vast range of things that are forgotten from history. The role of the Northern Ireland Labour Party, for example. When's the last time you heard that talked about? And their role, for example, was very, very important up to 1971, 72, in trying to give a cross-community voice within the Troubles. When's the last time you heard that any of them mentioned? The Provisional IRA, I know this because I was actively involved in the Civil Rights Commemoration. The Provisional IRA are now projecting themselves in history as kind of the militant wing of the civil rights movement, the armed wing of the civil rights movement, and there was a natural progression from civil rights to armed resistance. Most of the people involved in civil rights are appalled by that reading of history. So you always have in Northern Ireland what's developed is could be a culture war. You actually hear that expressed sometimes openly. That there's a culture war about the rewriting of the past and about memory of the past and about forgetting of the past. And these are two different versions, both of which are, like I said, written to be seen to be advantaged to one side or the other. So that includes, as much forgetting as it does remembering. Okay.
the proceedings here. Is that, yes.
Thank you so much.